A stimulus proposal from the White House gave the stock market a bump today. We'll have more on how it's being received. And back to school has been fraught this year, with everyone from President Trump to the PTA weighing in. Today, we hear from some of the students themselves.
There were 14 kids in my class, but my class could only hold 11 kids plus the teacher. So there were 3 kids that had to wait outside because we didn't have, you know, enough room for them to fit and us still be maintaining social distancing.
And speaking of school, what do field trips look like in the age of remote learning? It's Friday, October 9th. I'm Shelby Holliday for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The White House is preparing a $1.8 trillion coronavirus relief proposal, according to people familiar with the discussions. The move would partly bridge the divide between the administration and House Democrats, who have been calling for a larger aid package. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin spoke to discuss the proposal today. But our congressional reporter Christina Peterson says there are still sticking points.
Even after the latest White House offer, we know that there are still disagreements over what the speaker's spokesman referred to as a strategic plan to crush the virus, which we believe means testing, contact tracing, vaccine funding and development, all of those things combined and having a strategic national plan for that. And they're still negotiating on the overall funding level. But beyond that, there is the giant looming problem of the GOP-controlled Senate for a deal. Many Republicans have been skeptical that more funding is needed, and Majority Leader Mitch McConnell repeated that on Thursday, saying that a significant percentage of his members were not convinced that another deal was needed. So this is something that he's well aware of. And, you know, I think that this is where the president would have to play a really big role trying to convince reluctant Republicans to vote for a very large spending bill that's far bigger than what they had hoped to do. I mean, they couldn't even pass a $1 trillion bill on their own, so this would be potentially almost twice that.
Still, news of the aid proposal boosted stocks. The Dow gained more than 0.5%, the Nasdaq jumped 1.4%, and the S&P 500 was up nearly 1%, ending its best week in 3 months. Twitter is rolling out several changes that will make it harder for posts to go viral ahead of the U.S. election, including by changing how users share or retweet messages. Now, if users go to retweet something, they'll be prompted to comment on what they're sharing. Here's our tech reporter, Georgia Wells.
It's designed to encourage people to consider why they're amplifying something and also to kind of add their own thoughts. And so I think the rationale here is by slowing it down, this will catch more of the content that people are attempting to spread maliciously and that the good stuff will still filter through.
Other changes meant to slow the spread of misinformation include a tweak to Twitter's algorithm so that tweets other people like won't appear in your feed. Some people will start seeing the changes today, and Twitter will roll them out to all users October 20th. They'll last through the week of the election in November. And Louisiana residents are bracing for Hurricane Delta. It strengthened to a Category 3 storm today and could bring surges of up to 11 feet when it makes landfall this evening. That's according to the National Hurricane Center. The storm is expected to hit parts of Texas as well. Coming up after the break, what back to school has meant for students in New York this fall. This week, New York City closed hundreds of schools in neighborhoods where COVID-19 cases are surging to try and stem the spread of the coronavirus. The move came just days after many of them opened for partial in-person learning, and it could be a sign of what's to come for other schools across the country that are bringing students back to the classroom. WSJ's Lee Hawkins spoke with high schoolers in New York to talk about some of the challenges of going back to school amid the pandemic, and he joins me now. Hey, Lee.
Hi.
It's been a rocky few weeks for students in New York, which is the nation's largest school district. The start of in-person learning was delayed twice due to a teacher shortage, and about half of the over 1.1 million students in the public school system have actually opted to learn remotely, according to the Department of Education. However, there are still hundreds of thousands of kids trying to make in-person learning work, and you spoke to them to hear what the experience has been like from their perspective. So let's walk through a typical school day with them. First, there's the challenge of just getting to school. Tell us about that.
That for them was the most challenging aspect, because when you commute to school, you're in confined spaces on trains and buses, and the commute can be long. So I think there are a lot of kids who are concerned more about potentially catching the COVID virus in that environment. Here's what Lauren Viceado, a 10th grader at Harvest Collegiate High School in Manhattan, had to say about that.
I feel safe in my school building. The only problem is the train. I feel that the train, since there's a lot of people and no windows, that's the only problem with going to school. But I feel that in my actual school building, I'm safe.
Schools have coordinated protocols where teachers can impose consequences for those who don't participate and observe the safety precautions, not so much on public transportation. And this, for many students, was the most risky aspect of returning back to school.
So once these students actually get to school, what did they say about school itself?
I think kids and teachers did their best to adjust to the circumstances, but the first few days do take adjusting, and they really had to be able to pivot based on whatever unexpected realities were faced. I mean, the mayor kept delaying the start date, the reopening date for school, so teachers really didn't have a good idea of how to plan for their lesson plans, because they often did not know how many kids were returning, because more kids started to pull out and opt out of in-person classes in favor of remote classes all the way up to the end. And in one case, a student actually had a situation where she showed up to class and there were too many students.
There were 14 kids in my class, but my class could only hold 11 kids plus the teacher. So there were 3 kids that had to wait outside because we didn't have, you know, enough like room for them to fit and us still be maintaining social distancing. So we had to all get up and go to the auditorium where we could then have more space and, you know, then we could all be in the, like, in the classroom or in the auditorium together.
That was Layla Major, an 11th grader at School of the Future on 23rd in Lexington in Manhattan. But that's part of life right now in a pandemic. If you're going to stem the spread of the virus, you have to make sure that there aren't, you know, 30 kids in a classroom. And that comes with a lot of planning and preparation, something that the school system has been working on all summer.
And of course, a big part of school is the social aspect. How are students dealing with that? Are things kind of weird with their friends?
To hug or not to hug, that's the big question for a lot of students. Human contact is a very important aspect of the social-emotional part of school, and so many students wanted to get back to talk to their friends and to be in a space where they had that sort of collegial environment. Of course, it's complicated by all of the social distancing protocols. Here's Layla from School of the Future again.
My school, before COVID, we all, like, hugged each other. Like, every time you saw somebody, you would give them a hug. But every time that I saw somebody today, I think we all understood that hugging, like, wasn't the best thing to do.
There were so many kids that I spoke with who begged and begged and begged their parents to allow them to actually go back to school because they were missing that aspect. They were tired of being locked at home and not being able to hold conversations. And I think that many of the kids actually get more out of the in-person experience than they do the classroom experience. They just really like the fact that they're back interacting with their friends.
But like we said, about half of all New York school kids are staying home and doing schooling remotely. I'm sure for many of their families, they're staying home for the same reason we're staying home, which is health concerns. We've heard a lot of concerns about the COVID gap, that kids are learning less. But you actually talked to some kids for whom online learning has been a positive educational experience, right?
One of the big things is that there were many students who actually performed better in the remote environment than they actually do in the classroom. Some of it had to do with kids who like the fact that they get extra sleep because they don't have to take the long commute, so they're much more alert. A lot of other kids are not distracted in the same way that they would be if they had in-person classes. So every student is different. While at least half of the kids wanted to return back to school, The part of that 46% that decided to take remote learning did so because they actually really, really like it and have seen an improvement in their grades. I spoke to a student, Gregory Wickham, who just felt like he didn't need in person. Here's what he had to say.
I saw last year that online learning was easier, more convenient, and I was still able to learn things. And I just don't think going to school, the physical school building, would add that much.
And that's what I found with a lot of these kids. They're very mature. They've had to be extremely resilient going through this process. And many of their parents have seen them evolve through trying to adjust to just this very, very difficult time. And some kids are handling it very well.
Lee, thank you so much for bringing us this story.
Thank you so much, Shelby.
And finally, classwork is not the only thing that's gone virtual this school year. Teachers and students are also taking field trips online, and kids are traveling to places usually too far for the bus, viewing penguins at the St. Louis Zoo over video, exploring an erupting volcano using Google Arts and Culture, or pretending they're falling off the cliffs of Mount Fuji with virtual reality headsets. Maya Goldman on our education team says teachers are supplementing the virtual experience with real-life souvenirs.
It's really amazing to see the creativity that educators are putting into these field trips. I talked to the school in California that was fully remote still, but they're doing a kind of a drive-by on field trip days where students come to the school and they can pick up souvenirs from the field trip. And they were giving out pineapples when they went to Hawaii and berets when they went to France. And it's so refreshing to hear these kind of uplifting stories in education when there's a lot of, challenges going on in schools right now.
To learn about other virtual field trips, read Maya's article at WSJ.com. And that's What's News for this week. Our hosts are me, Shelby Holliday, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Mark Stewart. The show was produced this week with help from Paolo Bossanen, Mark Garrison, Kateri Yoakum, Amanda Llewellyn, Trine Nuri, Charlie Turner, Sam Westren, J.R. Whalen, and Chris Zinsley. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.